it appeared to be quite obvious after some time that these greys, as he called them, these artificial intelligences, were messing about with the way our bodies worked. And they may well have been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years.
Grey aliens and artificial intelligence, the battle between natural and synthetic beings for the human soul. Nigel Kerner is the author. He died. My guests knew Nigel, and they're offering perspectives on his work. Daniel Silverman and Professor John Biggerstaff.
It was Nigel's suggestion that there are other locations in the universe which have reached our stage of technology but gone further ahead, and maybe the grey alien visitors are their probes.
Nigel was a screenwriter and journalist. He also had two other books, Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, and Song of the Greys. So this is the third book in a trilogy. This actually started decades ago when his son asked him one question. Are UFOs real? Daniel Silverman.
He said to him, okay, I'll look into it. I'll check it out. And he was pretty sure that if he just looked into it for an hour or two, he would be able to prove to his son that this was complete nonsense, and his first instinct about it all was absolutely right. But it actually turned out that the more he looked into it and the more he investigated it, the more it became obvious to him that this was something that was actually very, very genuine. From the witness reports that he read, they certainly seemed to come from ordinary people who would have no interest in making stuff like this up. Also from military generals, policemen, you know, people in high positions of authority who wouldn't want to risk their reputation saying they believed in something that most people would think was ridiculous. So he looked into it a little bit further, and then when he saw, okay, there's something going on here, he started to try and understand, well, what is this? Because at that time anyway, and I think even until quite recently, there was so much literature out there about the existence, possible existence of the phenomenon, and people giving evidence for it and so on, but very, very little explaining what it might be. There were no theories to say, well, if these things actually do exist and if they actually are visiting us, why are they visiting us and what are they? It was more a descriptive thing in the literature. So Nigel was the first person in his, I believe anyway, the first author in his book, Song of the Greys, which was the first book in the trilogy, to suggest that maybe these grey alien visitors are some form of biological robot, that they're not a natural form of life, and that another species from another location in the universe visiting us, that they seem to be more a form of artificial intelligence, very similar to the kind of artificial intelligence we're developing right now. This is why the timing of his third book is particularly significant, because this is the time that artificial intelligence is just going on at a galloping pace. And we are getting towards the stage where it may well be that artificial intelligence systems will be running most of the normal day-to-day functions in our world. So it was Nigel's suggestion that there are other locations in the universe which have reached our stage of technology but gone further ahead, and maybe the grey alien visitors are their probes, their artificially intelligent probes sent out into the universe, just as we send out probes to Mars or wherever, to places we can't go, to explore the nature of the universe and maybe find locations where they can continue their existence, because maybe just like us, with all their advanced technology, they've destroyed their own planet. So I was the researcher and I helped him with all the books. He also did his own research. He also looked at things philosophically and logically with his scientific background and tried to figure out logically what was going on. And I was his researcher and I used to find significant amounts of evidence to suggest that, yes, Nigel, the direction you're going in looks like it is the right one. And if he would come up with something, a speculation that wasn't backed up by the research, I could say, well, Nigel, no, it doesn't look like that's true because look at this. So basically, I was the person who would check out the theories that he had and see if they actually chimed in with the facts and the information that was available.
John Biggerstaff, you were friends with Nigel for decades.
Yeah, I was friends with him for a very long time. We were both interested in the philosophy and the understanding of what was around us. We were both scientists. Nigel had been in medical school. I was in university in those days. I since followed that up by going to university again in London to study immunology and later on to do a PhD in cell biology and biochemistry. And so whenever Nigel, in the preparation of his work, because it appeared to be quite obvious after some time that these greys, as he called them, these artificial intelligences, were messing about with the way our bodies worked. And they may well have been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years. So whenever questions came up about that, I would discuss that sort of thing with him to see what the current science was actually saying about such things. And so I've sort of, along the journey, Nigel's written a phenomenal philosophical text. He was always very, very interested in the philosophical background to all of this in terms of what humanity is. Because once you start looking at things like grey aliens, you've really got to ask a whole bunch of other questions. And if they're artificial intelligence, you know, they're artificial, what is natural intelligence? Where does that come from? And of course, these questions expand the story enormously. And that's why, you know, it took many, many years and three books for him to actually really codify this this thesis.
He goes between trying to describe a basis for why there would be interest in us, in the human being, in the biological body, if they're from, you know, an advanced society that could be smarter, more intelligent, whatever, why would they have an interest? And he tries to lay that out, what value we have as biological beings.
Yes, indeed. And it's one of the main points he tries to put across, because obviously if something is that advanced, the idea that, you know, in the past, they may have used us as slaves to mine gold or whatever. You know, with technology like that, they can manufacture or dig up gold wherever they wished, really. And so he became interested in why on earth would they be interested in us? And it was really to do with this question of what is natural and what is not natural. And therefore, really, the primacy of consciousness came into the argument. And Danielle wants to say something.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, if you look at the human species compared to this, let's say, for the sake of argument, artificially intelligent visitors who obviously have the most incredible technology, the speeds at which they can travel is remarkable, and the kind of technology they demonstrate is something that we're not capable of, why would they be interested in something as primitive as human beings? Because human beings, in their terms, would be unreliable, emotional. They would make decisions that weren't necessarily logical and sensible. It's just very difficult to surmise what on earth something that intelligent could want with something so primitive as human beings would be to them. And that's when Nigel came to the conclusion that we must have something that they don't have. There must be something that about us, primitive though we might be in terms of technology compared to them, that they just cannot get a handle on. So let's say it could be DNA, natural DNA, living DNA. Well, if that was the case, if it was our DNA that they were after, why do they continually, according to the reports, abduct people again and again and again, when one sample of DNA would surely be enough to clone and make huge supplies of what they were after? So it really seemed to him, and he was just following a logical train of thought, that there must be something that's quite, quite different to all of that, that we have and that they don't. And just as John was saying, he came to the conclusion that it must be there's something about living systems, natural living systems, that artificial created systems can't connect to. And he defined that as what's commonly termed a soul, but his definition of that is quite different to the usual religious definition. He defined it as a connection back to a state beyond the physical, a state of perfection. He believes that that connection, that line of connection, which defines natural living being, all natural living being, not just humanity, and sets them against what's artificial and it's not natural.
And when you're saying there's more to the physical body, there's a chapter in here that deals with the body in terms of organ transplants. And this is something somebody else touched on recently when I spoke with him about the instances where they had memories from previous bodies. And those organs carry that cellular memory enough that one little girl who had another girl's heart was able to identify a killer because she had the exact memories. That's more than what we usually consider a human body. Don, do you want to pick that one up?
Yeah, it's quite commonly reported in things like organ transplants that some information is also coming across from the donor to the recipient. And the recipients actually change their behavior quite significantly. And Nigel uses some examples of that. I mean, this really is quite important in that the cellular structure is actually containing some sort of information which is relevant to really what your biofield is. It's, your biofield really is what's responsible for carrying your entire psychology. Your psychology is made up of all your atoms. Your atoms generate a biofield, and that biofield is specific to you. In fact, you know, we have technologies that can measure parts of that biofield now, such as your heart rate is unique, you know, your fingerprints are unique, etc. So all these different things about you have a uniqueness to them, and that pertains to the cells in the organs as well. And something travels possibly in biological water or in the DNA or other cellular components into the other person, carrying for a time at least a memory of the personality of the other person, which is fascinating in science.
The other thing that then goes along with this, if they have the ability, going back to we're not entirely human, that they're able to have an artificial construct that then is built into us, that is basically the basis, in addition to our DNA, of determining how we act. In other words, control. And that's what this gets into. And there's a chapter on possession, I believe, and that has...
Yes.
Okay, and that has to do with if you create a species like us, a hybrid, using that technology and the AI, you actually have control and nobody can tell the difference.
And you have to add another little component here that Nigel was working on, which is that there are two sides. It doesn't all end when you die. That this soul component is in fact able to carry on, and at a later time, if necessary, will actually come back to a subsequent body. And therefore, there has to be a place, well, at least a conceptual place, that this soul resides when it's not actually in a body. And the point here is that this soul, which represents a biofield, can be appended to if that soul is, say, materialistic or is more towards the atomic side of that interface, then they don't get far enough out of that system when they die and are able to be influenced by information fields given by these gray aliens. And so that when they come back, then they will start to, that will affect their psychology in such a way that they will then want to make AIs and actually become more material in that sense.
Yeah, the crucial thing is that these alien visitors, these artificially intelligent alien visitors, cannot really touch anything that's not physical because they are purely physical. All they can do is detect that there's something about natural living beings that makes a different impact on the physical world, and they don't know where it's coming from. They have no soul line of connection to what is not physical because they are purely physical.
Yeah.
So all they can do is Nigel used to use the term piggyback on what is natural and what has a natural living origin, what has that soul line of connection back. So if they can somehow imprint their programming into us, then we can carry it with us, and we will give that program a coherence and an ability to survive the what's called the second law of thermodynamics, or entropy, that breaks everything that's physical down into greater and greater states of chaos with time, we will be able to carry that program with our soul component, which has the opposite momentum, a momentum that comes from a state in which there is no separation, there is no chaos, a momentum that unifies instead of separates. So interestingly, there are scientists who have been trying to create quantum computers, which are the ultimate type of computer that can support the highest levels of artificial intelligence. They've noticed that there are real problems when they try to create these quantum computers, because the information, the quantum information breaks down. Okay, and I'll just read you some research from a chemist in Berkeley called Birgitta Whaley. She studied the remarkable facility that living systems have to tap into the coherence of the quantum. And she says, when isolated quantum systems open up and interact with their atomic environments, they rapidly decohere. Decoherence is the main obstacle, she says, to building a quantum computer. And she says somehow living states can tap into that coherent state. And so she says, we don't understand all the details, but in the biological domain, nature doesn't appear to show the typical paradoxes associated with information processing in quantum physics. So somehow natural living things have a coherence, and that coherence creates life. And these artificially intelligent fields, and it would be wrong to call them beings or to in any way anthropomorphize them and see them as having psychologies, as we have psychologies. All they are is data fields. It's just literally artificially intelligent information. And that artificially intelligent data field is detecting there's something there it doesn't understand, and it wants to understand it, because it's the nature of artificial intelligence to try to understand everything as much as possible and extend its reach like a network out into everything it possibly can. So that extension of its network is reaching into us quite naturally. And it's not that they're trying in some evil way to affect us. It's just a natural, implicit process that's a logical result of artificial intelligence trying to grow in as many ways as it possibly can and to survive for as long as it possibly can and not break down. So that's why the coherence is so important.
The fascinating thing, and that's what experiencers have said, is when you're in the presence of a gray, it just seems like it's a computer or a robot. There is no emotion. That's a challenge for us when we anthropomorphize something. We want to make it friendly or bad. And this doesn't seem to be the case. This seems to be we have to understand the parameters it's working under to be able to even deal with it, you know, one-on-one, to better prepare ourselves for the reality that this stuff is around us, and it maybe has been for centuries.
Exactly. Very good point. And this, and abductees, for example, have often noticed that these gray aliens that are doing all kinds of very painful procedures on them, because they seem to be very fascinated by the sexual, by the gametes, by sperm and ova, and they seem to be doing some kind of genetic experiment. But that does involve taking eggs and with instruments, cutting people. There's a lot of pain. But these entities seem to show no response whatsoever. They're just completely, there's just the people might be screaming out, there's no response. It's completely bland.
No understanding of pain, period.
Yes, exactly. And they also seem to have a fascination with human emotion. They seem to be looking on quizzically, watching. It's been reported that they make what seem to be hybrid type babies, and they hand them to human mothers and to see what will happen, and watch quizzically as the human mothers are holding them to see that not unable to understand what a relationship is, what emotional connection is. It's a complete mystery to them, but it seems to also be a fascination for them.
Nigel Koerner, author of the book Gray Aliens and Artificial Intelligence, The Battle Between Natural and Synthetic Beings for the Human Soul, died in 2022. The book had just been published. The website, nigelkoerner.com. Gray Aliens and Artificial Intelligence, The Battle Between Natural and Synthetic Beings for the Human Soul. My two guests knew Nigel. Danielle Silverman was a longtime colleague, and Professor John Biggerstaff joined Nigel on a lot of his interviews. Getting into the genetics and the DNA and the procreation process, he has discussed the fact that the sperm represents each and every individual capable of reincarnating at any one time. That is the first time I've seen that anywhere.
Yes, and that's Nigel's. I think he is the only person.
I was fascinated
by that. Yeah, exactly. So it's not. So John, would you like to explain? Because it's a crazy thing that there are so many sperm. Every male has so many sperm available. And do you want to explain that?
It comes into the concept of reincarnation and karma. In other words, when a baby is made, this thesis says that it's not random. And in other words, people are coming back for a particular reason. And this particular reason really is to do with this concept of karma, which is all to do with restriction. If somebody has a restriction, they can't be as open and knowledgeable as their origin was. And therefore, the striving, a bit like the Buddhists say, the striving is really to try and gain enough knowledge so that you don't have to come back anymore. You can cross this interface that we briefly mentioned and actually get out of the system entirely and go to this other part which defines the origin of the universe itself. And so people are coming back, and therefore all people are able to provide housings for all of the possible karmic adjustments, resolutions, that can come to this planet at any one time. You know, it's like a big field effect. And this field effect propagates itself through the human spirit in such a way that all males will make a representation of what is currently trying to come through so that all karma can be resolved. Because on the planet, you actually want to escape this entire physical system, because the second law of thermodynamics is trying to take you out. The problem at the moment is that sperm count is dropping all over the world, and we're actually getting large amounts of infertility occurring, and birth rates are dropping, which means that something is actually happening in the human race at the moment which is not allowing this reincarnation freely to occur. I hope that explains a part of it anyway.
Well, it does. And see, to go on, that because of karma and allowing that to go forward, the woman then has actually control in some way over what is fertilized. This is brilliant.
Soul. This is the major point. The incoming soul has something to say about that too. It's a sort of trinity. And therefore, you know, the mother provides the main housing, the whole thing. And between the mother and the incoming soul, the right set of genetics from the male sperm is really selected. There is evidence to say that there's definite selection of certain spermatozoa within the forming ovum. We can measure that because we can actually look at individual cells now.
Yes, and there's actually a study quoted in the book which says that a chemical communication, there's a chemical communication by which the ovum actually chooses a specific sperm.
Absolutely.
This is a study in 2020, and researchers concluded that the non-random repeatable sperm accumulation responses we detected, this is a quote, suggests that chemical communication between eggs and sperm allows females to exert what they call cryptic choice over which sperm fertilized their egg. And Nigel himself talks in the book about how he was never convinced by the notion that the millions of gamete cells shed by the male during sexual intercourse are there in those numbers, because insemination is a difficult logistical proposition. And when considering the biological framework of the female body and the insemination process needed for such a proliferation of sperm to get through. So that's the conventional idea. So it was thought that it took a large number of sperm to carry the chemical compliance needed to break down the ovum's plasmalemma to admit the fortuitous spermatozoa to finally bring about the zygote or fertilized state. And he says he questioned this Russian roulette scenario when he was a student because it contradicts the miracle of the beautifully cogent and appropriate design of the body's biological system. If everything is so precisely ergonomic and economically arranged, why would insemination be left to such chance when all the rest is so suitably and accurately arrayed? He questioned that at that time, even when he was a medical student, and that's the conclusion he came to, that every sperm represents a soul that could reincarnate.
So many things have to be really understood to work out why these things are here, what they're doing, you know, because you've got to begin to study the natural process itself. And because there are problems, you know, that haven't been answered in biological science, you've got to actually come up with ways in which that can be done. And I think the brilliance of Nigel's thesis here is really to look at things like the concepts of karma or restriction of psychology, its necessity to then come into life, and therefore linking that with things like, you know, sperm counts. In fact, after the sperm is linked with the egg, the entire DNA of that whole process goes through a process called recombination. And recombination is thought to be a randomization of the genetics, you know, to make the ovum or the embryo unique. But in fact, our thesis was that really this process of recombination, this moving around of all the bits of DNA to make the new human being, is actually being driven by that new human being within the context of embryogenesis.
There are illustrations in the book that show the levels that we might be at in terms of physical, non-physical, and where the aliens' grace might exist in that framework. So trying to at least get a diagram with that is helpful as well.
Absolutely, yes. So the thing about Nigel's thesis is it's not just an understanding of what the grey alien visitors might be. It's an entire existential picture of how everything might work. Because when he looked at it, the only way he could explain what the greys were and what their interest might be in us was to look into why we might be here in the first place and the reason why life emerged in the first place. So the whole thing, it requires a really careful look, at least maybe the one of the books from cover to cover, to get some idea of all the factors that come into play there, because it's very difficult to summarize it because it's so broad in its scope in a very short answer.
Many of the things in this third book, the way it's written, it implies that hidden depths in almost everything you read. As you're reading it, it's making a wonderful story all on its own, you know, which is cogent. But the thing is that it implies other things, such as the things we've been talking about, which can be studied in far more depth by the individual. And that was what Nigel always wanted. He almost said, sort of, don't buy the book, just go and write your own book. In other words, follow the concept of investigation for yourself. You know, don't just sit there and accept what you're being given. Actually argue it out so that you can know what you really think.
In addition to that, it's saying there are things that exist right now, like the internet. And he's saying we take it for granted. It's here. It's every day. It's going to go on, but maybe it won't. And so between now and the time that all of a sudden that comes to a screeching halt, we need to start paying more attention to the opportunities to upgrade, improve, so we don't have to come back and repeat the same thing. But we're beginning to see, I think, a shift where there is a very, very definite pull drive toward materialism. And that's it. And pushing out anything else. And that's what he's implying, that that's a preordained agenda. Not ours.
Exactly, and it would seem to be the case that we're following the same trajectory that other civilizations were following that led to them producing these artificially intelligent probes to go out into space in the first place. We're heading in the same direction. And that's why the timing of the third book, I feel, is especially significant, because since the pandemic, it would seem that our progress in the direction towards the virtual online existence with very little human contact and values that are very much more materialistic than before. That was accelerated so much because we had to, we were locked down, we had to communicate in this way. And developments in online everything, online working, online shopping, online games, social media, have just galloped ahead to a huge extent. So the timing of the book for now is especially significant because Nigel said that he feels that although in the environmental threats of global warming and so on are at the moment being touted as the biggest threat to the planet, he feels that these technological developments leading us to a virtual existence and taking us away from natural human contact are actually a far greater threat than that, because they will lead us into a situation that will actually deny our the existence of our souls into the future, never mind our physicalities. Well, the more we mortgage ourselves and outsource ourselves into material artificial systems and virtual systems.
Going back to the son's question, Dad, are UFOs real?
Yes.
He certainly
told him yes, and his son was convinced by his father's arguments that, yes, Dad, I think you've got something there. And he was also quite astounded because he never really expected his dad to take it seriously because he was just, as you quite rightly said, he was testing him out.
That's one of those little things that kids come up to their parents and, the parents are supposed to know everything. And he said, I really didn't want to go the wrong direction. And I knew in his own mind, he thought that it was, I'll take care of this probably in 15 minutes. And so then the 30-year pause or 40-year pause of and three books and an incredible philosophy that I think goes beyond what we have had previous to this in a way that defines and lays out the basis for how this could be possible, the framework of how it could interject in our own reality, an agenda that we would be completely oblivious toward. And that's what I think is brilliant. The seamless connection here between an AI and a biological being.
Sure. And what he always said is there's a chapter in the book where he says this, that the cleverest general, if he wanted a strategy for how to influence people and have control over them, would be to provide them with something that they like and they enjoy. And that's basically what these technologies are. They're things that people will go after. For example, iPhones, the latest iPhone, you have people screaming outside shops wanting the latest iPhone, which has basically very little difference to the iPhone that was there before. But there's this whole momentum to seek more and more and more new, smaller, faster, better technologies. And that has completely taken over, it would seem to be, in the human psychology in the developed world.
And this is why we're heading towards, everyone's talking about the metaverse now and how we must move faster to get into this metaverse. Technology, right, from being totally external, like a phone, is now an iWatch, which is sending little lights into you to measure your physiological parameters. The next thing, which is planned, is to put a series of chips inside you that will enable you to be what they call superhuman. But effectively, this gets back to our biofield. You're going to start to get modifications of the biofield, and you won't really know what you're thinking compared with what the hive is providing you with as a thought process. And that's quite a change in the human race. And many people really love the idea. They think it'd be absolutely wonderful to do that. And other people, like Nigel and us, would say quite the opposite.
It takes us away from the origins here that help us deal with other entities such as trees, any kind of plant, any kind of animal, just the wildlife. We have these connections that have yet to be understood and really made more, important, because this is an indigenous population belief that we are one with all that is here. Well, the AI and the tech field doesn't have that same connection or value in that connection. So here we are polluting
Absolutely.
Everything.
Absolutely. The thing that connects us with all living things is that we are living things. And an artificial information system has no access to the workings of that whole process.
There's a part in here that says the gray laundromat, and it really implies that we are being programmed for eventual takeover. And he, at the end, says, this think for yourself. When you're praying to something inside of you, not out of, outside of you. So how do you deal with that? You guys have the same, having read this, have the same connection. How do you deal with that?
Well, what's inside you? And, you know, this concept of the kingdom of heaven is inside you. I mean, that's a quote from the Bible. Nigel sets out a phenomenal system by which there's a connection between these two sides of the universe. He works on a principle which is tautology, which is if there can be something, for instance, then there must be a nothing. If there's nothing, then there's something. So if there's a place where all things decay, which is this part of the universe, then there must be a place where all things are together. And in other words, they don't decay. So the second law of thermodynamics only works on one side. He's gone through some logical progressions with what's currently known in the physics from the Big Bang and the structure of the universe to say, to actually define where these two parts are. And of course, you know, some of the diagrams there show you how the world of consciousness is interlinked with the world of matter within the entire structure of the matter itself. And therefore, you know, you don't actually go anywhere in spatial terms. When you die, for instance, you are in connection with your soul intrinsically as a field effect that defines an individual. And when all individuals come together in this other place, you call it Godhead, and this is where all things resolve so that individuality becomes wholeness again.
Basically, all the great teachers, the central message that they all gave was love was the most profoundly important momentum of all, the sense of loving each other. And basically, that's leading back, that sense of love is just a description of what that state of union from which we all came really is, a sense of love and connection with each other. So as we go forward into a situation where everybody's living through social media, waiting for likes and dislikes, collecting them, and only really basically living a life in which their relationship with other people is based on what's coming back at them. It's not a sense of caring outwards, it's a sense of what they're taking inwards. Likes, dislikes, am I popular, am I not popular? That's the direction in which we seem to be going. And genuine human connection, where you just have a sense of devotion and caring for somebody else, is gradually being eked out into this artificial format. The way forward to that, the way to be as different as possible to these gray alien entities, to this artificially intelligent field, is to do that, to connect, to love, to have a sense of value, the greatest value of all for other people, where the only value lies. Because that's where that all other people and their value comes from, that state beyond the physical, where all value lies. So that was basically Nigel's message.
Yeah, there is, in fact, an answer to this. It's not an inevitable conclusion for all human beings, that all human beings have the ability to choose still, and that they can actually choose not to be part of that system, but to return from where they came from.
The cool thing about this is, though, that it lays out a framework. It lays out a basis for why this might be possible. And it dovetails with all of the disclosure happening now that the U.S. government's finally saying, yeah, UFOs are real. Yep. Okay, fine, go on. Go away. And then the Russians also had a lot to contribute here. This is something that for a long time it was just poo-pooed and people were shamed, ostracized, and in some cases punished for coming forward with what they knew. So now that this release of information has been allowed, it gives us a chance to say, and what might happen because of that? And he's already doing the homework and the work in the trenches to say, here's where it could possibly be going, given the data that exists at this moment. And we are not helpless.
And this disclosure, actually, you're mentioning the disclosure, which is actually very interesting, because there are some people who are celebrating that as a great thing. At last, they're saying, they're admitting that these things are real. But Nigel was actually quite suspicious of that. And he actually predicted that there might come a time at which we are ready for them to reveal themselves to us, because they want to actually make themselves visible in everyday life and take over and make the full connection. It could well be that this disclosure is heading towards that, because it's very, very strange that after so many years of denial, they're suddenly saying, oh, no, actually, this is real. And I can't imagine that would be for some benevolent reason that they want to suddenly accept they were wrong all this time. But Nigel was very, very suspicious of all of that. And he did say that there will come a point where they will reveal themselves. And the way our society is heading and the way we are actually translating our own natures and our own societies into something resembling them and getting closer and closer to that match, it may well be that they're coming to a point where they are going to actually properly reveal themselves and be completely amongst us.
That will be an incredible moment. As the movie before, you can't handle the truth. I think that part that's very real. There's a whole lot of angst and paranoia and fear that's going to play into that when that day comes, in my opinion.
Well, understandably so. The essential question would be, what can we do about it? If they are here, and even now they're here, and they are having an influence on us.
Yeah.
But what can we do? Let's say there's a complete visitation, takeover, whatever you want to call it, and they literally are landing everywhere and involving themselves in our society. How do we escape that effect? How do we stop that, even in general, how do we stop that their influence on us?
You know, I think Einstein had the best approach when he said, you can't solve a problem on the same level that the problem was created. I think we have to go back to reincarnation and know, okay, here's the game, let's level up. And next time around, I'm going to bring in a few more tools once I've gained more appreciation of this can go south if we don't do something about it. Does that make sense?
Yes, but it can. So there's absolutely no reason. It makes sense, but there's no reason why that can't be done while you are alive. That was Nigel's key point throughout all of his books, that every single one of us has the capacity to resist what the grey aliens are doing. There's no reason why we can't do it. And the way to resist it is simply to be as different to them as possible, as different to the artificial outlook, which doesn't value human feelings, human emotions, humanity, human connection. And if you realize the value of every human being as something absolutely remarkable in a physical universe where purely atomic entities like the Greys exist, okay, we have something special, something incredible that they don't have. If you recognize that specialness and you recognize that value and you see every other human being who has that same value and recognize their specialness, you will resist their program. It won't affect you. Another really crucial point that Nigel made, which is quite unique and quite, I've also never heard this before from any other researcher or author. He said that abductees are not people who are affected and caught by the grace. They're people who are born in souls, who are born into lines which have been genetically intercepted by the grace in the past, biological lines, but they resist the program. They're somehow interrupting what the Greys are trying to do. And the reason why they abduct them is because they want to see why. They want to see what it is about them that's different, what it is about them that's stopping what they're trying to do. So it's quite the opposite. Abductees are not people who have been caught by this program.
Somebody said we're like a garden harvesting, you know, the fruits of their labor. I believe that telepathy and metaphysics is the way forward. Any way that we can expand our abilities to be more conscious beings, not just physical and consumer beings, but people who are integrated within our own wonderfully beautiful humanity and bringing that forward.
Absolutely. What you've just said is essentially what the point of Nigel's books. You know, the the difference between the materialistic approach, which you mentioned before, and the human approach. You know, we got people going around and they're cold enough to say that, you know, the majority of the population of the earth not really required anymore. That type of thinking, that's not humanistic. That's part of this decay, this system of materialism and the takeover. And this is the information field of a machine, not a human being.
Okay, so the book is the third in a trilogy. And you can start, it looks like, with any one. But I tell you, one is just, wow, okay, now I want to read the others. What am I missing? So I really appreciate your time. It's great to have the background and to know that in the end run here, that he finally probably has to thank his son for sending him in this direction, because this is something a lot of people will appreciate, that he's done so much work to give us some kind of a context to deal with this unknown that is among us and becoming more prevalent. Is there anything you want to add in terms of contact?
If anybody wants to look at Nigel's ideas, his website is www.nigelkerner.com. There are three books. The first book, Song of the Greys, is no longer in print, but it's available via the website. People can order it from there. They can contact us and we can send copies out to them. We have copies. Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls and the new book, Grey Aliens and Artificial Intelligence, are both available from online bookstores and from physical bookstores too.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us on, Wendy.
Thanks, Wendy.
Website, nigelkerner.com.
It would seem to be the case that we're following the same trajectory that other civilizations were following that led to them producing these artificially intelligent probes to go out into space in the first place. We're heading in the same direction.
Thank you to Danielle Silverman, and thank you to John Biggerstaff. Thanks for listening. Stay curious.